Welcome to the Short Term Show, the show about short-term rentals and long-term wealth, with real property owners hosting real properties who are crushing it in the vacation and short-term rental space. And here's your host, Avery Carl.
Management Monday is proud to present this episode of the Short Term Show. Management Monday is a weekly course that will teach you everything you need to know about managing a short-term rental from a distance. How to get more bookings, higher ADR, how to hire and fire vendors. Even if you don't want to manage it yourself, you need this course so you know how to manage your manager. Over 10,000 superhosts started their career with Management Monday. And the best part is, it's free for short-term shop clients. Start your journey today at theshorttermshop.com. Theshorttermshop.com.
Hey guys, welcome back to another episode of the Short Term Show. As you know, we like to branch out from short-term rentals here and there to kind of talk about other types of real estate investing. And this is a particularly cool type of real estate investing that people sometimes don't even think about, and it can be tied into short-term rentals if you do it right. We have not yet talked about on this show house hacking. And so I thought, since we're going to talk about that we would get the king of the house hacking strategy, the author of the house hacking strategy, Craig Kurlop.
You said it right, Avery. I heard the hesitation, but you nailed it.
So guys, right before he came on, I said, make sure I pronounce your name right. And he said, it's like Kurplop without the P. And then now I can't not say Kurplop. And so it was really hard for me to not do it right then. So now you know. But anyway, Craig Kurplop, will you please introduce yourself, tell our audience a little bit about who you are and what you do?
Yeah. So for those that don't know me, Craig Kurlop, author of the House Hacking Strategy and, you know, leader of an investor-friendly team out in Denver. And we focus a lot on house hacking. And so for those that don't know what house hacking is, it's the investing strategy that's really good for a lot of beginners, where you're buying a 1-4 unit property with a low percent down, anywhere from 0 to 5% down. Because of that low down payment, you're required to live there for 1 year. And then you can, you know, rent out the other bedrooms if it's a single family home, the other units if it's a multifamily home. And that rent can, you know, cover or at least subsidize your mortgage, thereby eliminating or drastically reducing what likely is your largest expense in housing, and allow you to start actually being a real estate investor. I always like to call it kind of like the training wheels of real estate investing.
That's a great way to put it, the training wheels. And so if you're going to house hack, do you have to do the roommate thing, or could you just buy a primary, live there for a year, move out and do it that way? I've always wondered, is that like...
You know, the term, I don't think there's like a tried and true meaning. What it really means is that you're making income off of the place you live. Now, I think buying a place, living there for a year, if you can make your mortgage payments and then still continue to save enough for a down payment on another house a year later, by all means. But I think a lot of times when people starting out, you're going to need to collect, you know, 20, 30 grand or so for that next down payment, and not having a housing expense can pretty much just get you there.
Gotcha. Okay. That makes a lot of sense. Well, so let's talk a little bit about your portfolio. So what's in your portfolio currently?
Currently, I've got a little bit of everything. I started off with house hacking, and so I still have my house hacks. I'm a very much a buy and hold guy. I really hate selling. Jay Scott actually told me when I was just starting out that he regrets every house he ever sold. And if you didn't know, he flipped like thousands of houses. And so that really kind of hit home to me. So I've always just been trying never to sell. And so, yeah, I've got, you know, some duplexes, mostly like residential, single family duplexes, all that. I'm, you know, an LP in a couple of syndications, but most of my stuff that I've actually put effort in are the 1-4 units.
Okay. And are those all in your immediate local area, or do you do out of state as well?
Yeah, no. So a handful of them are in Denver, probably like half are in Denver. I've got 6 out in North Carolina, and I've got 3 up in Idaho, and then 2 in Florida. So kind of all over.
Okay. A little bit everywhere.
Yeah.
I like that. So how do you feel with the way interest rates are? How's that changed the house hacking landscape?
Yeah. So house hacking is has kind of been ever evolving, right? In 2014, so I bought my first property in 2017. And my mentor at the time bought his first property in 2014. And I was looking and like, oh my gosh, his deal was so much better than mine. It was three blocks away. He bought it for almost half the price and it was a better place. And so I was like, oh man, like it's over. Like real estate investing is over. This was 2017. But I kind of like, you know, gathered the courage and I bought the place anyway. Because I knew that in 2020 and in 2023 and later on that I'd be very happy that I bought that place in 2017. Sure enough, I bought that place for $385,000 was the first place I ever bought. And now I got it appraised back in 2022 for $800,000. So it's kind of nuts to think about like what House Hacking can do. And this was like a deal that didn't work and people said not to buy. And in 2017, I don't know if you remember, but like it was the height of the market and like, you know, prices have never been this high before. So therefore they can't go any higher. And that was kind of like the sentiment. And so everyone was waiting for this looming crash to happen. And here we are 7 years later, it still really hasn't happened yet. I would just say, don't be discouraged about kind of what other people's stories are and what their house hacks were 4, 5, 6, 7 years ago. But know that today, and then 5 or 6 years from today, you're going to be very happy that you bought that house. To kind of answer your question, what we see work the best, at least from like a house hacking perspective, not considering the short-term rental element as like a normal person that would live there, has been the rent by room strategy where, you know, you buy the biggest house you can, put like 6, 7 bedrooms in there, live in one room, and then rent out the rest.
Okay. That makes a lot of sense. And I too bought my first long-term. So that was 2013 that I bought my first long-term. And back then we were told the market's over. If you didn't buy before 2010, then you're screwed and nothing makes sense and nothing's going to work. And we went to all of the Nashville local real estate meetups and there were all these people there that were talking about all the money they're spending on direct mail and blah, 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 and wholesalers and all these crazy things that we were like, oh my God, we're never going to be able to get anything. Everybody's saying it's over with. And then boom, right off the MLS, great deal, paid $122 for it. It cash flowed $1,000 a month. And, you know, we were just two idiots that bought something off the MLS when all these people are spending thousands of dollars on these crazy strategies and telling us that everything was over. And it's funny. We got our first short-term in 2015 and people told us we were overpaying then. And then, you know, the people who bought in 2018 wish they would have bought in 2015. And then the people in 2020 said, well, let me wait until COVID's over and the crash happens. And then in 2022, everything was double the price and the crash still didn't happen. And then now in 22, they were waiting for the prices to go down. Now in 24, the prices have not gone down, but the interest rates have doubled. And it's just like things keep getting worse. And I would argue that the crash did happen inventory wise. We sold less properties, we being the United States of America, not me, in 2024 than in the past 15 years since, you know, 2009, really, which is not 15 years, separate thought. So, or maybe that is 15 years.
Either way,
15 years, because I just said that without subtracting. Anyway, the point is less homes were sold in 2024 than back in the biggest crash in history. So, you know, the prices didn't crash, but the actual home sales did. So something major is going on, and I don't think it's going to result in prices dropping dramatically, unfortunately. So everybody likes to say, oh, you're a real estate agent. Of course you're saying buy real estate. But if you look at the past 10 years, buying 2 years earlier always is more attractive than buying when, you know, that same year that you're looking. So
I think there's a lot of recency bias, right? Because the 08 crash, a lot of people remember and a lot of people were alive for. But if you remember to the last major crash before 2008, it was like 1929, right?
Oh, really?
And so it was like, I mean, like that's why 08 happened, was because real estate never went down. So banks were lending at 125% and all that because their thought was, you have to remember, like, these banks aren't stupid. Like, they weren't stupid in 2007, 2008. These are some of the smartest businessmen and finance people in the world running these massive banks, lending money at 125%. And it was because real estate in the past 80 years never went down. Of course, in 2020, that sounds stupid, right? Or 2023, whatever year we're in now. But like, we're in 2024. I still don't know.
No one here can add, guys.
No one here can add, subtract, or why are you even listening? Yeah. But no, but you know, like, that was kind of the sentiment. So you have to remember that, like, you know, real estate may, like, could you maybe get a better deal by like 5% next year? Sure. But I think the odds are not in your favor. And so you might as well just buy over the next 10, 15 years. And then in 15 to 30 years, like, it's kind of hard to lose.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. People like to argue though. So yeah. let's back up though. So let's back all the way up to somebody who's listening to this show because they want to get into the short-term rental space, but they're like, oh man, I don't have a down payment. I think if they back up even a little bit further and start with a house hack, not one that they're going to turn into a short-term rental later. I mean, just like a true house hack. What would be your advice for those people when, you know, say they just live in any medium-sized metro area in the country? What are we looking for when we're shopping for a potential house hack?
So if you're not taking the short-term rental into consideration, it really depends on your market. And so like Denver, I would say is like medium high. And in those, and you can, or like a person can still kind of afford a house in the suburbs. And so if you can get a $600,000-$700,000 house, that's got 2,800 to 3,200 square feet. And, you know, you can throw 6-7 bedrooms in there. You know, people, you know, Denver at least is a big enough city where people are willing to rent by the room because rents are so dang high that, you know, you can get $900 to $1,000 for a room. And that really juices the numbers because that same, house, 2,800 square foot house might rent for $3,800. But if you got seven beds in there, you might be able to get like $65,000 to $7,000 for it. So you can almost the rents by doing rent by room. And again, I know short-term rentals too, like you can double, triple, quadruple the revenue on it.
So do you think this kind of sounds like, I think people might hear this sounding like you have to be really young to do this, to do the house hack thing. And what would be your response to that?
Absolutely not. We've had literally our age range for house hackers is 18 to 75. We've literally helped a 75-year-old dude house hack. And so it's just one of those things like, you know, you can never, it's never too late. Yeah, it's never too late. It's never too early. I mean, now's always the best time.
Yeah.
Right.
Right.
And to spin it kind of on like the, you know, the short-term rental play, one thing that I think would be beneficial for you guys if you want to get into kind of like a short-term rental on training wheels, if you're new at this whole investing game, is to buy a house hack with this low percent down. And they have these apps out there like Rover and like PetSits, right? And so you can actually go to somebody else's house, essentially try to be out of your house as much as you can, but it's still your primary residence, where you're either traveling or you go PetSit. So you can actually like make some money while pet sitting. And then you can also be renting your house at the same time. And you're kind of like getting that experience of a short-term rental, getting the experience of house hacking. If you want to build a short-term rental portfolio, you know, you kind of can test it on your own house and see what works.
Oh, wow. That's quite a hack. So you get on Rover.com and you go stay at other people's houses for the weekend and watch their pets and rent yours out short term as it, you know, you're technically house hacking while you're gone. That's, wow, that's genius.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's like when you're, you know, when you're in the beginning stages, I just think it's, you know, any extra $50 to $100 you can get, like just take it because you don't have a lot up front. So you're really working on building that nest egg. And then once you've got, you know, a large enough nest egg, you know, you don't got to do that stuff anymore. But yeah, you know, in the beginning, I think a couple of years, go ahead and go all out.
Awesome. My mind is blown by that hack. All right. So we'll see if you have any more of those.
This episode is brought to you by Short-Term Rental Listing Advice. Join this Facebook group and post your listing to get advice from other hosts, including myself, on how you can improve your listing. Or just post your property so you can show off. Join us at strlistingadvice.com. That's strlistingadvice.com. This episode of The Short-Term Show has been brought to you by your friendly short-term shop real estate agent. We are hyper-local and totally dedicated to your success. Whether you want to buy your next short-term rental or sell the one you currently own, we would be honored to earn your business. We are in all of the best vacation markets in America. Find us at theshorttermshop.com. That's theshorttermshop.com. Brokered by eXp.
So are there any types of markets? So, you know, people could be living anywhere listening to this. Are there any types of markets or types of cities that lend themselves better to this strategy than others? Like, is there anything that doesn't work? I guess let's start there.
I've never seen anything that's like, oh, this doesn't work in this market. These days, like Airbnb or I would say this, maybe if you're in a really, really small market, rent by room may not make sense. If there's just like, if you can get a one bedroom or a studio for like $800, it just might not be there. Mm-hmm. Right. There just may not be a demand for people living in a room. I think like the rent by room is definitely better in larger cities where, you know, the expense of rent is a problem. And so in those areas, you're probably going to have lesser, you know, the cost of living and like the price of houses is probably going to be less. And so in that point, you could probably do a duplex or a triplex or a quad and actually just rent them out as normal units and still actually, you know, make some decent numbers on it.
Okay. And that was kind of my thought too, is that unless you live in like a super small town where rent's just really cheap to get your own place, this probably works pretty much anywhere.
Absolutely.
What do you think are some of the common pitfalls that you may or may not have seen, heard of people running into with this strategy?
Every year gets harder. I'll say that. In that, you know, it's a very popular strategy. It's become more and more popular over the last 5 years or so. And so like the competition keeps getting better. I used to be able to slap up Avery. I wish I could show you my first Airbnb photo of like my bedroom. Like it, you would laugh at it. It wouldn't get a single booking today, but it made $1,100 a month back in 2017. You know, back when I first started doing rent by room, I could take pictures with my iPhone, have unmade beds. It doesn't matter. And I would get the place rented pretty quick. Now, you know, things are better. Like like Airbnbs and like how they look are nicer. These rent by room houses are nicer. People are getting a better product. And so you just, you know, things are just getting, you got to be more on it now than ever is mainly how things have changed.
Yeah. I think that's pretty true across all real estate, is that you have to do better. You have to be better than you had to 5-10 years ago.
Yep. 100%.
What about barriers to entry? Are there any, it seems like this is probably, in my opinion, the lowest barrier to entry in terms of buying real estate or getting into real estate investing. Is there anything that I'm not thinking about in terms of people listening who might want to get into this that you might be a little bit of a roadblock or a speed bump, so to speak, to get into this?
The biggest barrier to entry that I see these days is having the income to help you qualify for a house that makes sense. Now with the interest rates being so high, I mean, you kind of like, you got to make almost six figures, if not well into the six figures, on a W-2 job to like get the loans that you need, or have 2 years of, you know, of income in some sort of 1099 or your own business. But yeah, no, it's harder and harder to actually just qualify for these types of loans these days. And so if you are new and starting out, I would highly recommend, you know, we have a lot of people, you know, asking their parents to co-sign or whatever. And that's kind of a lot of the route people are doing these days.
Yeah, gotcha. What would you say is like, I'm trying to word this in a way that's not going to sound like I'm trying to ask people to be slumlords, but what would you say is like the lowest level, like tier of a house you could buy where this could actually work? So is that like B+? Could you do it with a C? Do you want like what would you say is the best tier of real estate to buy for this, or the lowest?
I think the best is a B neighborhood. Mm-hmm. Without an HOA, where parking on the street is allowed. Parking is a big thing with the strategy, especially if you're going to get six or seven beds in a house and the driveway may only fit two or three. And so it's pretty easy to figure that out. Hop on Google Maps, park that little yellow guy right in front of the house, do a 360 view. If there's cars parked on the street, you're probably okay. If not, then, you know, you want to consider, you know, I would stay away from HOA, stay away from all the, even like, you know, a lot of the newer builds have HOAs. And so typically what we're seeing are houses built anywhere from like 1960 to 1980, solid houses. And frankly, like houses back then were built better.
Yeah.
Not going to lie. Like I know you think this house you're buying in 2022 or 2023 is going to last you a long time. It'll probably last you 10 or 15 years, but you got to remember these houses are lasting 40, 50 years. And I've done some, you know, I've talked to and read some articles on like some of the building materials they use nowadays compared to like just the wood difference between 1960 and today. It's totally different. And so I think that's a strong consideration you got to have when, you know, going and buying these newer builds, these newer communities. But small tangent there, but yeah, no, the B neighborhoods are kind of what we see are the best.
Okay. B neighborhood, no HOA, and parking on the street is allowed.
Yep.
Yeah. You don't want to do this in New York City where you got to move like every 2 hours or
definitely,
you know,
whatever
not the sign yeah. says, and it's like between 9 a.m. and 2 p.m. on 2 p.m. Thursdays and Tuesdays.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay. So I think that makes sense. So what would you say is your, if you had to pick one thing, what is your very favorite thing about this strategy?
Probably just the ability for anybody to do it. And you don't need to come from money. You don't need to have any of that. Like it's just so achievable and so repeatable for everybody. I mean, we've helped hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of people do it. I know of thousands and thousands of people that have done it. Like it's not something that's special. Anybody on who's listening to the show can go find an investor friendly agent, go talk to a lender, and literally probably start looking for houses, you know, tomorrow. And so I just think like that is my favorite part, is that you can get in with such a low percent down, you can live rent free, and just how it just changes, literally changes people's lives by doing this, you know, just a few times.
And since you mentioned the word lender, I just want to clarify, because I think I make assumptions that people know this. So you guys who have been listening to this show might have been thinking, oh, I got to save up 10, 15, 20% to go buy a short-term rental. If you're going to house hack, Craig, I'll give you this one to answer. What is the minimum percent down that you have to save to put down on a house hack?
So if you're a first-time home buyer, you can do 3% down. If you're in the military, you've got the VA loan, which is 0% down. And if you live kind of out in the sticks, and it's kind of weird of what they consider the sticks, like there's a USDA loan, like somehow our proper, like where we live is USDA, even though we're right outside a city, you can get 0% down loans for USDA as well. And so on your first one, there's no reason why you should be putting down even 5%. It should be 3% or less. And then after that, you can be putting down 5% or using the FHA loan for 3.5%.
Guys, if you weren't aware of that, that's a really, really amazing tool to be able to get into the real estate investing space to only have to save up 3%. Now you do have to live in it for a year if you are doing one of these primary home loans. Any primary home loan, you have to live in it for a year. Same thing, especially with VA loans. Do not try to trick the VA. They'll catch you. They check, mm-hmm. you know, it's specific to be a benefit that they don't want to be abused. So, but you do have to make sure you are following the rules and not committing mortgage fraud by not actually planning to live in the house. Or not planning to live in the house for the right amount of time. You do have to plan to live there and get roommates, or maybe do the rover.com thing like Craig said earlier, which is genius. So make sure you're coloring inside the lines when you're using these great tools like 3% down loans. That's pretty cool.
Yep, 100%.
Okay, Craig. So we're coming towards the end of the show, but first, before I move into our final three questions, is there anything about house hacking that you feel like our audience needs to know that we haven't mentioned on the show yet?
It's easy to paint it as like rainbows and unicorns, because the results of it are, especially after having done it, you know, having done my first one 7 years ago, I've since stopped house hacking. I don't think house hacking is the goal for everybody for the rest of their lives, but it's a great start. But there are going to be, you know, it is work. Right. Like you're putting in some hours to get the places filled, to furnish the places, to, you know, manage it, to do all these things, to get things fixed. And so and things go wrong. I've replaced quite a few furnaces and water heaters and all that stuff. And I will say, no matter how many water heaters and furnaces, and I've had to do structural repairs, like you name it, I've probably had to replace it. My net worth is still much, much higher after dealing with all that stuff, but buying real estate than not. And the financial, you know, the financial future for me and my family, the trajectory of that has just immensely changed, all because it started with the house hack.
So guys, I want to highlight the last thing that he said, where he said it has changed the course of his family's life. And if you find, you know, whatever real estate investing strategy you find that works for you, if you stick with that and just keep putting one foot in front of the other and keep fighting through, it can change your life. And there's 1,000 ways to do it. There's no right or wrong way to do it. You don't have to pay somebody $10,000 to give you my exact 12-step formula to be rich. All it is just continuing down the path of real estate investing. And I think that was a really good answer to the last question before we move to our final three. So first question, Craig, is what advice would you give 20-year-old Craig if you knew then what you know now?
That's a great question. I think the advice I would give is to just don't be afraid to kind of like keep pushing. So I guess there's two things here. One thing is actually I'm like the opposite of like analysis paralysis of I tend to just be like, go, just take it, just do the deal. And so I'd probably just say like, hey, slow down, do your inspections, all that kind of stuff. Cause I did get caught up in a couple of bad deals because I kind of was just like overconfident, right? I had done 3 house hacks. How could anything ever go wrong after this? And then my fourth one was kind of a disaster. And so, you know, just kind of like reminding myself to don't like check all the boxes before actually, you know, moving forward with the investment.
Great answer. And next question, very similar, but what advice would you give a new investor who's looking to get started today in 2024, which is a weird time in real estate? What would your advice be?
My advice to anyone just getting started is always just to like start with a house hack. And then like house hacking is also not an active strategy. Like you house hack, it takes a month to get it set up. And you've got 11 months doing nothing. So then you go focus on doing your short-term rental arbitrage or wholesaling or whatever, being a real estate agent, like whatever your other side hustle in real estate can be. And so I just think house hacking makes sense in conjunction with whatever you want your real estate career to be.
Also great advice. And last question, what is your favorite book that's impacted your mindset?
Man, I always go back to the 4-hour work week because like that's truly what got me from thinking like a W-2 person to thinking like an entrepreneur. I know it's probably been said a million times, but maybe
not as much as you'd think, actually. Yeah.
Maybe it's like an old enough book now where like it's like so in the past that people don't appreciate it anymore. But I'd say that's the book that got me thinking different.
Yeah. It is such a great one though.
I used to always think about like the income I made on an annual basis, but like that was the biggest thing for me. And that was like so hard to digest. But when you think about it on a monthly basis, which is how you think about your expenses and everything else, like it just, I don't know, that one thing for me was like, whoa. So.
All right. Great recommendation. So Craig, if people want to learn more about you, follow you on social media, where can they do that?
Yeah. So on Instagram, I'm the Fi guy. We've got our own podcast for beginner investors called Investify. And those are probably the best two places. And you know, if you're in Denver or Idaho, thefiteam.com.
All right. Well, thank you so much, Craig. You've been a wealth of information on house hacking. Thanks for coming on.
Thanks so much, Avery.